Mini episode 661 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Unheard Scene, your home for great music interviews of all stripes. Follow them on the web at unheardscene.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross here with Part 4B of the History of Royal Rumble Anthology. We are talking 2001. This era is 2000 to 2002 that we are covering. We've already got 2000 behind us. Again, as I always preface this by saying, if you want to hear our overall take on the Royal Rumble, structure of it, what it would come to be subsequently, Part 1A, 1988, we spend a good 10 to 15 minutes at least setting all that stuff up. Every year we just kind of jump right into it, set up the macro a little bit in terms of where the landscape is of the company before we get into the card. So 2001, Kyle, we are coming off of the hottest business year in the history of the company, and of course there's the sense that things can only go down from here, although we weren't thinking that at the time.
Oh.
There was no sense that it had hit a peak.
I should bring that up. I had some issues with the booking, I remember, at the time.
Okay. Well, the fall of 2000, it was already starting to go down, in the main event scene anyways.
Well, there were, for the first time since the company had overtaken WCW, some WCW-like mistakes, I thought, from the WWE.
Is that overstating it a little, or in terms of the magnitude of what WCW-level mistakes would come to be?
I think not pushing guys, not listening to fans, I don't think that's overstating.
Okay.
I think,
well, not on
they
the
were
magnitude
strong
of
enough that, you know, with Rock and then Austin coming back, that it didn't matter at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there were decisions that were made around this time period, certainly going into 2002, that wound up hurting this company moving forward.
I do
the
agree
with that. The present was very good, but the future, quite frankly, 3 months after this show, what should have been the all-time period for this company actually was not. I want to be quite disappointing.
Right.
You talk about macro things. My 3 points for this 2000 to 2002 era, which is part four, as you said, calling it from the war to the game because the Monday Night Wars are ending. We're seeing the ascension of Triple H, a.k.a. the game. The other point I'd like to make is that this is the period that the Rumble really surpassed SummerSlam, in my opinion, as the number two pay-per-view in the company. 2001 did a monstrous 625,000 on pay-per-view, wound up beating SummerSlam by 60,000. And remember, that SummerSlam came after the biggest non-Big Four pay-per-view ever, too, keeping that in mind.
That's right.
That being the Invasion pay-per-view. Also in Cleveland. We get to talk about all Cleveland pay-per-views when we do this together.
That's right. Fittingly.
So, business was good. At least in the WWE side of things. In the WCW side of things, business was not very good. As a matter of fact, it was almost closed for good. Again, part three was the Monday Night Wars era of this history, the Rumble. And WCW here goes out of business 2 months later.
Here's an interesting thing about that. Let me just say this. We always talk about the Royal Rumble to WrestleMania period. We're here to talk today about the Royal Rumble, but by WrestleMania, we would be from three major companies in this country down to one, ECW and WCW, biting the bullet more or less simultaneously right before WrestleMania 17.
Yes, and it sucked. I think in retrospect, it sucked.
Yep.
It's not. I mean, Vince McMahon probably loves it. I'm sure
right.
all the people in the front office love it. If you work for the WWE, you would love it. But I don't think it's good for wrestling as a whole.
No.
That we only have one company. And I think that was what led to some of their arrogance with these decisions moving forward. You know, we kind of talked about how in the 2000 Rumble, that WCW, what they were doing, was no longer relevant to WWE's decision-making. And I think sometimes it led to arrogant decision-making, like some of the guys who would come over maybe not getting pushed to the most of their abilities, Jericho, Benoit, to name a couple.
Right.
But, look, let's not sugarcoat this. With the return of Steve Austin in late 2000, thank you, I would have left my wallet here.
I was afraid of that.
Yes, yes. This company was on fire. This was peak roster for me. The roster was at its height. And we talk about in some of the last couple Rumbles, you know, one of the big things, talking points, disagreements, call it what you will, you and I had with our respective enjoyments of 98 and 2000 is that I just didn't think the depth was there in those. The depth was here in 2001, and the depth is present in the fact that we referenced this into the 2001 Part 4A, that you didn't have the undercard guys coming back to work the Rumble here. So
right.
This was really deep, and the talent that had come over in the last year. Right after 2000, we referenced the Radicals come over. Benoit, Guerrero, Malenko, Saturn. Now, Malenko and Saturn quickly kind of faded into the abyss,
right,
which I thought was unfair. They could have got a little bit more of them. Don't think either of them could have been huge stars like Benoit and Guerrero were. I just don't. But I think
Saturn, maybe? I mean,
no.
Malenko's personality would have hurt him.
No,
held
I, thought
him
they
back.
Could have been, I thought if they would have kept them as a group, you know, Benoit is the lead, Guerrero is the middle, and Malenko and Saturn could have been a great tag team.
Tag team, certainly, yeah.
I thought, you know, they could have kind of done a little Tully and Arn thing, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
But, last, they didn't. Jericho, Big Show, who else? And, you know, all these ECW guys had started to come in by 2001. You know, this roster was just really loaded. It was on fire. You had no idea. If you turn this on, you would have no idea that in a couple years this company would have cooled off.
Right. That's absolutely the case.
So, especially with the returning Steve Austin, who, it needs to be stated, you know, we kind of glossed over his non-participation in 2000. Remember when he returned for Unforgiven 2000?
Yeah.
It was the angle he was going to find who would run him down in the Carl Engel Survivor Series?
Right.
Are you aware of how many buys that show did?
I am not.
Unforgiven 98. Guess which year he... Well, I just told you, damn it, I screwed it up. But anyway, Unforgiven 98 did 309,000. He was on that show.
Okay.
Unforgiven 99, he was a referee in a six-pack main event, 330,000. Unforgiven 2001, he was a heel champion there, did 350,000. 2002, Unforgiven did 300,000. 2003, Unforgiven did 360,000. So you have a... You're seeing, like, there's a baseline for that September pay-per-view, right?
That's right.
It's, like, basically 300 to 360,000. Unforgiven 2000, Steve Austin's return did 605,000 buys.
Wow.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is a box office draw.
Yep.
Now, interestingly, Judgment Day, when he actually wrestled, he were against... Oh, no, that was... See, this is out of order, because Judgment Day was the May pay-per-view, actually, in 2000. What did No Mercy do in 2000? 550 when he were so, you know.
The point still holds.
Yeah. Business was good.
Yeah.
And you had a really talented roster, and I think that this show, although I don't think it gets the... Maybe I'm just reading the wrong people. I don't see a lot of people saying that this top to bottom is just as good as 2000. I think it's pretty damn close, man. The main event... being the world, or I shouldn't say that, the world title match, scratch main event, world title match, is not as good here.
Right.
By any means, but there's still a match of the year contender on this show.
Mm-hmm.
The Rumble here is better.
Yeah, I think it's a little better.
I think it's a lot better, actually.
Okay.
That's the difference. I think it's a lot better. I honestly, you know, I know I kind of stopped you and you said, oh, you know, we like 2001. I'm like, oh, let's not go that far yet.
Right.
It's close. I think it's a lot. It's 6-1, half a dozen to the other for me, maybe.
What's interesting
is... It's a hot crowd in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And it just... You know, you talk about how the product was hot in 98, 99. It was the IT product. Man, you watch this. I mean, this they were on top of the freaking world, it looked like. Even though, like, the booking... I had issues with the booking. But
right.
When you just watch this show in 2015 and you kind of forget about... You know, this pissed me off on SmackDown. This pissed me off on Raw. If you just watch this show, holy God, I mean, there were just so many guys that were over the main event scene so much better. I mean, they had like eight guys on this show. Maybe that's exaggerating. Five or six that were more over than the most over guy today.
I don't know this point for sure, but I thought that I had seen online, I won't go so far as to say a consensus, but most people that I had seen online, and I agree with you, I think the 01 Rumble match itself is a little better than 2000, but 2000 seems to be commonly regarded by many as the second best ever. So we may be sort of an outlier here as far as what we think. I don't know that for sure.
Wait.
We may be. I think the majority of people think the 2000 Royal Rumble match is a shade better than 01. I think we may be an outlier.
Oh,
I don't think so.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think. I think it's generally regarded that the match itself, everyone prefers 01. I think I'm on the lower end of 01, quite frankly. And I like 01 Rumble. There are people who think this 01 Rumble is like a candidate for best Rumble ever.
All right.
There are a lot. It makes my top five. It's number five.
It makes my top five on what is so far. I got it at 4.25, above 2000's 4 stars, below 1992's 4.5 stars. So I got it slotted right in there right now.
See, I had 92 at 5, as you know, and it's not, and number 2 won't be close to that.
Right.
But I gave this 3.75,
okay,
which so far of all the Rumbles we talked about is my second highest. It's going to end up being the fifth highest.
Okay, and I haven't rewatched any of the ones past 02.
Okay.
I'd be shocked if I stacked any of them higher, so this is probably going to be my second highest.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that. Let's talk about the show top to bottom, though.
Yep.
There's some interesting things, by the way. We, you know, again, we're talking about, you know, WCW is an effector. There's Triple H still figures prominently in here.
Right.
We are calling this the War of the Games, so we'll be talking about Triple H.
That's right.
And, you know, we've already kind of touched on business, so let's go with the matches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I felt the need to do that interlude. That was kind of stupid. Scratch that out in post-production.
Worked.
It was stupid.
Oh, that
dumb.
Worked.
I thought I had a point there. It was stupid. I didn't have shit.
it worked till you started bad-mouthing it.
That's why. Whatever. I think the bad-mouthing was more entertaining. All right. The opener here is Edge and Christian against the Dudleys.
Yeah.
Tag match. It's funny. It's a straight tag match. No tables and no ladders involved. In my notes, I had that I really enjoyed this, and it was nice to see these guys doing a match that got over in front of the crowd without the need for tables and ladders and them killing themselves.
Right.
Now, there was the slight issue of concussions in this match and how they were liberally talking about how Bubba Ray was dealing with a concussion. Oh, how long can he go?
Yep.
And they were kind of like, this is, now, I don't want to excuse WWE, but this was kind of before everyone knew about the severity of concussions. And I remember, like, Jim Ross kept saying concussed at the time. I remember watching this live. By the way, do you know where I watched this show live at?
Where?
A church at OU. There was, like, this...
The Hare Krishnas?
I don't know if it was that. It was on... oh, God, what street was it? So I lived on East State.
Probably UCC, right? I can
yes.
see that one. How did I guess?
I think. I shouldn't convert that, because you know me. I don't know anything about religion. I don't know what denomination was. All I know was I lived on East State. I shouldn't give away addresses.
I
lived on East State Street, and like a couple, if you just walked up like a few blocks, there was this church there, and it was whatever street came right into East State, and they were like, "Yeah, we're going to show." And back then, we didn't, you know, in my house, we didn't have the capability to get pay per view.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, I'm in college. I talked about it in 2000. I didn't watch this show live.
Okay.
Well, I did watch this show live, but I didn't watch most WWF pay per views live at that time because I didn't have the capability.
Okay.
So I was like, all right, screw it. And I remember when I watched this not enjoying it as much as I should have, A, because I kind of was souring on the booking a little bit, but B, I was watching it by myself. Like, none of my roommates came with me.
Okay.
And, you know me, I don't really, like, socialize people. I don't know when I'm there. Like, I just, like, so I just sat there kind of, like, yeah, this is cool, but like it was kind of like, it was sort of awkward watching this in that like I wasn't responding to anything. Like, normally, like, I would do like jokes with you, like do JR impressions, and I couldn't do any of it, so I was like behaving watching this show.
I always remember
that when I need to talk about this when I watch this show, is this bizarre thing. And like, I was looking around, I was like, I don't really want to be friends with any of these people. So that's that. But anyway, I went to that because I remember when I watched it live, like, JR kept saying concussed. And I'm like, what a silly word concussed is. Now it's just a part of our lexicon. But aside from the concussion issues, which, again, it kind of make me kind of cringe when I watch it.
Well, not only that.
This was a good match and a hot opener. They do a title change. The Dudleys. Everything was over. Like, let me tell you how everything was over. What, like, really caught me, again, those 2015 goggles.
Right.
They did the they being the Dudleys did the "What's Up" drop, which like now is kind of like eye rolling when you think about it. This thing got so over when they got ready for, like, the crowd was insane for us. All of the traditional Dudleys, Edge and Christian spots were really over here, and we should talk about
that's in my notes. The Dudleys were tremendous faces here.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, we should talk about from the last year where the Dudleys kind of came into their own and the tables match with the Hardys. They became the unlikely breakout babyface team. All the Hardys were very over as babyfaces as well. Edge and Christian were the breakout heel team. They turned out to be the best of the three, in my opinion. What a 2000 they had.
Right.
The titles had changed hands among those three a lot of times, quite frankly. Title changes, you know, we kind of ruminated about that at some point in that 2000 mini episode that, you know, maybe there was a few too many title changes during this period.
Sure.
But there was one here. But this is a good match. This is like a three-star match. This is a solid opener to get the crowd moving.
But before we let go of this here, the one thing I want to note also, too, for again, all of the anachronistic talk about concussions here, things that we would fart at today, they also actually at one point used the term bruised brain, I believe, that Bubba had, as far as really getting technical about this, really establishing that it was a concussion. So it's so weird, too, because we just had a sports medicine doctor on the show recently, Dr. Kenneth Aline, and I asked him about this. I said, have you ever watched any old sports stuff that you watch now, and it's just like, ooh, I can't believe I saw that. He said, yeah, I was watching a game with my son recently from the 1960s where you could see they sent the guy back in with a concussion. I was like, ooh. So that wasn't the case here. Bubba, I'm pretty sure they were doing a kayfabe deal. But
that was like a big thing.
Making light of it in a way that we never would or should.
No, they would never do, this guy's got a concussion, because they'd get a ton of shit for it.
Right.
We should talk about this. There was a segment here. There were a lot of bizarre backstage segments during the show. Like, there was something with, like, the APA, like, doing the I'll show you mine if you show me yours, and it turned out to be their Rumble numbers, which
it started
kind of
last year, we said, in 2000 with the Rawification of the Rumble.
Yeah.
With
and, like, Crash Holly showed up and cut this right thing. There were a lot of, like, backstage things. One of them, and really kind of one of the most prominent things on this show, and this, I don't know, some people enjoyed this. I didn't enjoy it, was the participation of Drew Carey. Now of Price is Right fame.
Yep.
You know, then of the Drew Carey Show fame, I guess. He was doing, I guess, some comedy pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And they worked him in, and we all know where it goes, that he participates in the Rumble. I guess that was okay, because it was kept very brief. But these backstage segments were kind of cringeworthy, I thought. Like, he came in, and I don't know if he was trying to make a joke or not, but, like, he confronts Triple H and Stephanie, who are going over for the World Title. She's like, Triple H's like, oh, you married the boss's daughter? He's like, sorry, I haven't been watching much lately. Is Kamala? He's like, is Kamala around here? And Triple H just looked like he wanted to, like, leave. Like, he's like, why am I doing this?
I have that in my notes that he did that. Yeah, and Drew Carey, Cleveland's own, a good talk show host. Not on the level, I would say, of six-time lounge guest Bob Barker, but a good talk show host.
No, he's a downgrade from my main man, Bob Barker.
Well, I had to get in that plug. But, no, I agree with you. I mean, it was really goofy how they had it set up here. It prefaced him being in the actual match itself.
Yeah,
and
they did a thing later on in the show where he meets Trish, because Stephanie and Trish were doing their feud.
Right.
And Stephanie's like, oh, I'll introduce you to Trish, and you can hit on her and stuff like that. Because, you know, Trish was dating Vince in the story at the time, and Stephanie hated that. So, and that's how, you know, Vince came in.
A jealous Vince McMahon puts him in.
Yeah, Vince's like, well, you should join the Rumble. And it was all right. Again, it gives, I guess, in a match that, again, I talked about the framework, you can only do so much. And, you know, by the time we're now in 2015, the Rumble's maybe gotten a little repetitive. We haven't seen a lot of new things. At least the Drew Carey, like, it's one of the things you remember about this Rumble is Drew Carey, right, wrong, you know, good, bad, or otherwise.
Right.
But one of the things that I remember about this show, Rick Morris, as we double back here, I would argue the highlight of this show is on the undercard. Very rare that an undercard match, quote unquote, steals the show.
Okay.
On WWE, you know, kind of when the way they built their template in 98, the main event was always the best show.
Right.
Best match on the show. You very rarely, and there's certainly instances and exceptions where this happens, but it's very rare that an undercard match is the best on the show.
Right.
But it is here, and that's Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit ladder match, Intercontinental title. I gave this 4 3/4 stars, same as Triple H Foley from the year previous. I'll give a slightly to Triple H Foley over this. but my God, was this an unbelievable match.
Right.
And I suppose we do need to speak on the Benoit factor.
Right.
This is the first time that we talk about him. This is his first appearance. And when I watched this again, and it had been a long time since I'd seen it, I kept thinking two things to myself. God damn it, Chris Benoit, why did you murder your family? Because this man was quite simply one of the greatest professional wrestlers that ever lived.
Agreed.
I mean, this guy, you just like, they did a video package for this. You talk about the video packages being effective. Like, the way it was cut and stuff like that. You're like, how awesome was this Chris Benoit?
He was my favorite.
And I remember coming into this, and maybe I didn't enjoy it as much at the time. It didn't have just as much to me sitting at some random church in Athens. Is I was a little sour that both these guys had taken what I thought was a step back to the Intercontinental title picture after sort of failed world title runs. You know, in that summer of 2000, we saw Benoit not go over The Rock, Jericho lose to Triple H, that fully loaded pay-per-view.
Well, in Austin's absence, both of them dipped the toe in the main event scene and then came back.
Yes, and then Austin came back and they really sort of, well, we had nothing for him.
Right.
Well, not nothing for him, but they moved on. But
creators got nothing important for you.
Yeah, but I'll say this. When you just watch this show, you kind of forget about that. And this was just unreal. I think this was the best match these two ever had. God, I've been slipping on my words a lot in these podcasts.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Better than the famous match they had in 95 at the Super J Cup.
Okay.
Which was kind of the match that put Jericho on the map internationally.
Right.
You know, he used that to go to ECW.
Right.
And then, you know, it was WCW. And
that's
then
right.
What have you. But this was the best match these two ever had. I would argue this may be Jericho's best singles match ever.
It could be. I mean, I
don't think I ever gave a Jericho singles match 5 stars.
I couldn't muster a star rating. This is the first Benoit match I have watched since the tragedy. And that was, I mean, it was something I had kind of gone back and forth on. And I decided that to do this and to do this right, I mean, I got to watch the match. And it's just, I can't disagree really with anything that you said about the match. I mean, it was really, you know, I'll never get back into watching a Chris Benoit match like I used to. I don't plan on making a pattern of it.
I was fighting myself. I was like, I don't, like, it speaks to him how good he was in the ring. Because I wanted to be like, you piece of shit.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm watching, I'm like, Jesus, this man was so good. Like, everything he did was so crisp.
Kyle, if we're conflicted, if we think this is hard, what are we going to feel like when we watch the 03 Rumble? That's going to be a hard one
and
to
sit. And 04, the actual Rumble.
Well, 04,
you know,
yeah, 03, also,
04, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, when he's actually,
those,
when
yeah.
he's when he's more of a centerpiece of the show,
yeah.
I know, it's going
mean,
to be tough.
It's
at
really
least we don't have to
difficult.
Do at least we don't have to do WrestleMania 2000.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Or WrestleMania 20, pardon me, WrestleMania 20.
Well, yeah, yeah. I could
also
never
glad
do that
we
one.
Don't have to do WrestleMania 2000.
Well, yeah, exactly. Could never do that one quite the right way. But, I mean, I don't, technically it was fine, it was great. I got into it as much as I possibly could, which that's a very low bar. I can't get into a Chris Benoit match that much for the obvious reasons. I mean, I agree with you on everything that you said.
Were some incredible spots in this match. There, the one point when they did the spot where Jericho hooks him in the walls of Jericho on the ladder, like Benoit's bent over the top of the ladder, is like insane. There's something where Jericho pins him underneath the ladder, and Benoit like still does this feat of strength where he pushes up, and Jericho goes flying. There's one spot that you just cringe on because you obviously know
the headbutt thing.
Yes,
yeah.
Benoit does a tope, and he takes a sick unprotected chair shot to the head, flying out of the ring. And you just, because you know, obviously, you know from the autopsy what his
that,
brain came
that
out.
Had something to
and
do.
And you're
with
just
it.
Like, oh. God, you can't take that. Like, I remember at the time thinking of that, being like, and they kept replaying it, too. Remember, they keep, like, Lawler, Jerry Lawler, who I have to take issue with, he really was descending into even more so into hideousness here. He kept like, I want to see that again, I want to see that again. And
hey,
at the time,
I think that's the one that's going to make him kill his family.
Yeah, and it's like, I remember the time being like, Benoit is crazy to take that shit. And now you watch, you're like, God, I wish he wouldn't have.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's so bad.
Choose your words more carefully in retrospect, announcers.
Yes. But, yeah, this was unbelievable. Jericho goes over and wins the title. It felt like it didn't mean much because you kind of forgot about what the Intercontinental title meant here. The Intercontinental title had kind of taken a step back at some point.
You know, and the one thing I want to put in here in terms of talking about a Chris Benoit match, I'm going to reference the weekend after the tragedy. We recorded a live full edition of the FDH Lounge that you were there for on the Sunday night, the weekend after the tragedy.
Oh, I
and
was.
You were. And I said at
oh,
the
I
time.
I remember that now.
Yes. And I said at the time, I predicted correctly, I would not be watching any Chris Benoit matches. I didn't anticipate doing a series like this subsequently where
little
I have
you know,
to.
Little did you know you'd have to deal with me.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I said at the time, I said, I think we're going to look at this like trying to evaluate Chris Benoit as a professional wrestler is going to be like trying to evaluate Hitler as a painter. And it, I don't think it was quite on that level.
No.
Not quite.
No, that was a little extreme.
We were feeling extreme things the weekend after the tragedy. But that's I just wanted to revisit what I said in the immediate aftermath because it didn't quite feel that way. It didn't feel good, though. Let me tell you, it did not. I wanted to shower after I watched Chris Benoit's match. So I won't be watching any more of them than I need to do our reviews.
Okay. I should Jerry Lawler, I just want to bring up, he had some terrible takes in this match.
Well, yeah.
At one point, JR, oh, who, by the way, got in his first, we got our first XFL reference along the way here. There was some spot where he somebody got hit by the ladder, and JR goes, well, it's just like a fair catch in the XFL. And I was like, the fucking XFL. Why did they do that? The XFL was really bad.
One of the things that helped kill the boom.
Yes.
One of them.
But Lawler at one point, so when JR said we're live in 70 countries, Jerry Lawler, and I know he was kind of playing like the stupid old man at this point, goes, I didn't even know there were 70 countries on Earth. That's just like that makes your, like, you know how they're fighting, especially now for these advertisers?
Right.
And it's so, like, I know this is like me being Nelson Picker for a change.
Right.
That kind of shit makes your product seem so stupid.
Here's a funny thing. We bemoan today's product. We bemoan the corporate PG nature of it. That's one of the rare points where being corporate and PG is good. They would never make that joke today.
They would never say that because, you're right.
Because today they realize how dumb it makes them look.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if it was just Lawler, like, you know, having no leash or whatever. Oh, and then I'm sure Bret Hart really enjoyed during this match saying, oh, did Shawn Michaels invent the ladder match? I'm sure Bret, the sound you hear off camera here is Bret throwing things in his Canadian home saying, I'll kick you, I'll potato your ass again, Jerry.
Well, you know what, too? I love Bret Hart, a repeat past guest of the show, but has there ever been anybody in the business where it's easier to get their goat with something like that?
Bret takes things seriously.
He's the easiest guy to troll that there's ever been in the business.
It's
maybe not anymore, but he used to be before his injuries.
Well, it's funny, you know, Meltzer has made this point a bunch of times that if you're like a younger fan and you go back and you watch the stuff with the Survivor Series screw job, you're probably like, what in the hell is the problem with these people? Why do they care so much about who's going over in this frickin' match? Like, it's like we're so desensitized to winning and losing now, which isn't a good thing necessarily, but like those two, like that was the furthest it had ever taken, and it was taken to a point of ridiculousness. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're to watch Wrestling with Shadows, and now, if you're a younger fan, you watch it, and Bret just absolutely going insane. I am not losing. This would be like my character blowing its brains out.
Yeah.
You're just like, you'd be like, what is wrong with you?
You know what's hilarious to me? I never thought of this until you said this. But
I'm just stealing Meltzer's point.
Okay. You know how 98 played off the 97 finish with Deadly Games and how they've ripped off the Survivor Series finish a million times since. Starrcade 99. You know how? Okay. To a kid that you're just showing this, that
you're
wasn't even alive
then.
Yeah, the Survivor Series finish. To a kid who's watching this, it's like if he's seen the ripoffs of the Survivor Series finish before the actual one, imagine the confusion it must be. Like, well, why is he getting upset? That's like when they did the story where they screwed over Mick Foley the next year.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny, actually.
And it's also funny that he is to the point in his age where he didn't see it, and they're still rehashing an angle from that long ago, which is another issue
it
for
is.
Another day.
Yeah,
Benoit Jericho loved it. I think it's – I have this – is all of all matches that took place at a Royal Rumble pay-per-view.
Uh-huh.
The old school list of lists, if you all remember.
Okay.
There was a show once upon a time I did that.
Yep.
I have this number four.
Okay.
But it's tied for the number two ranking at 4 3/4. So number three will be coming up soon.
Okay.
It's a very strong top four.
I don't think it's Ivory China.
No, it's not Ivory China because we go from the best of times to the worst of times.
Yeah.
The less said about this, the better.
Okay.
You know, again, if you want to compare this to 2000, so we've gone over, you know, Triple H Foley was the match of the year contender in 2000, Benoit Jericho here. This probably was worse than Mae Young showing her tits. This Ivory China.
Considerably.
Segment.
Well, because they weren't her real tits. That's how you know it's worse. They were gimmick tits, and it was funny.
So
you know it was funny.
Like, this is one of those things, because it was like the show is not built around this match, so this cannot in any way diminish how much I like the show overall.
Right.
But this is the app. Really, it's the only shitty part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
This Ivory China bit, where first I hated China at this point. I wanted her to go out. I know that behind the scenes, some things were conspiring against her, and her life, quite frankly, has never been the same since.
Which, again, and I referenced this before. She apparently, to hear her now, she was months away from finding out about any of this still at Royal Rumble at 01.
And you know what?
What?
She was still being placated a little bit. She was still getting pushed.
Sure.
So I'm wondering if she's being truthful, which she's not very
she
often.
Might be right.
Like that.
That it was a double life.
Like that she. I mean, she might be stupid for it, but
right.
She was still being placated. She was getting pushed.
I kind of believe her because she was getting the Mr. McMahon guilt booking. Like, she still doesn't know. Yeah. Let's keep her in the main spot on the women's side.
But you know what? All that being said, I have no sympathy. Like, you should feel bad for her. But you watch this, and I just... So what happens is they do this match. Ivory was part of the Right to Censor group, a group that I thought was not used to the most of its potential.
Right.
It became kind of like a jobber group, but I thought they could have been a nice foil for Austin right when he came back. I mean, it wouldn't have gone. I mean, Steve Austin versus Stevie Richards ain't going to light the world on fire, but Austin beating him up would be okay.
It's too bad that nobody in that group had the power of ESP, because Ivory could have cut some amazing promos. You know, you will go on to become... someone that does gangbang porn videos. You know, that would have been great. I would have smiled at that.
So I don't even remember how this was set up, other than...
Alleged neck injury.
Ivory was the women's champion. This is the women's title match. And they did a spot here, and the match just ends out of nowhere when China does her really stupid handspring elbow that was, you know, 0.3 Muda. And she lands wrong, and they do this serious neck injury that no one bought.
Yep.
And JR and King are doing the hushed voices. There had been some injury angle where China had, like, she had was coming back here from, I guess, what was being booked as a serious career-ending neck injury.
Yeah.
To be honest, I blocked that out of my mind.
Is this the first time
she had wrestled since that angle, since coming back?
Right. Is this the first time JR and the King, when they were trying to sell something super serious, went to the Owen voices? Is this the first time they used it in a fake way?
I can't remember that.
I think it is. I think it is. Shame on you guys is all I got to say.
This was bad.
Yep.
This was really bad. How it just ended. And, like, what made it worse is China totally was squashing Ivory before the angle. So, like,
right.
She basically... was squashing Ivory and then did this out of nowhere abrupt injury angle.
Right.
Where you're supposed to feel sympathy for her. And it just didn't work. Like, she was like this indestructible Amazon for the first 90% of the match. And then it's like, oh my God, she's hurt.
Right.
We must feel such sorrow for her. This didn't work. China was, again, she really squashes Ivory at WrestleMania 17, which is like the low point of that show. It's even worse than the gimmick Battle Royal. And after that, she's gone. I mean, she finds out, and they get rid of her.
I share your distaste for the general direction with China. I always thought that Ivory, the only GLOW alum ever to make it into the company, I always felt like she was an oasis, a quality worker in there in a division that was just full of shiznit.
She was okay. I mean, she wasn't...
Her and Molly Holly, and, like, what else was there in that whole era? I mean, I know everybody now wants to act like Trish is the greatest super worker ever just because she got to where she didn't suck toward the end, but... I don't know. And same thing with Lita. Lita was kind of a spot monkey, just like her, both of her boyfriends at one point in time. But what I find interesting.
She was okay. She was serviceable. I think, like, she was kind of like the anomaly in that she was like the veteran female worker, whereas a lot of these other people that they brought in during this period were new.
Right.
They got bigger pushes because they had more of a star. She didn't really have a star quality. She was very good in this role.
Right.
With
she
RTC,
was.
I'll bring that up.
In this role, what I want to mention about this with STC is something that revealed about somebody else. because JR makes a comment, as I mentioned to you off air, about Ivory being her character being sexually repressed. And it's a funny thing because you've talked about this before in the Attitude Era, the progression of Mr. McMahon in the beginning to somebody that would give the big power gulp when Stone Cold was going to come after him, to a guy who believed his own BS and thought he was the toughest SOB as things moved along. Mm-hmm. JR went through a progression himself. Do you remember the earliest days of the Attitude Era of, like, my mama's watching at home, like, whenever there would be anything like that? By God, King, my mama's watching, you know, like, whenever anything would be risque. And then, like, by the end of the Attitude Era, JR is just, like, full-on embracing it. And of, like, yeah, they should be showing their tits.
Well, because I think, you know what was
97, 98, JR wouldn't have called anybody sexually repressed. His character changed with the times.
Yeah, I wonder if that was him being a company man, because remember, this was kind of that period where they were getting, well, the whole RTC angle, what was that? It was their response to the PTC trying to pull their sponsors.
That's a good point.
So I think that JR was being a good company man.
That's a good point.
And being like, oh, you know, they should be able to show, you know, this is fun. This is just good fun. Why are you bothering us with it? I think that's what it was.
But it's not in line with, like, 98 JR is my point. So it's kind of interesting there. I just thought that was interesting.
He had more credibility in 98.
He did.
I think he cared more, too.
But this match, we get this one out of the way before we have a significant return to quality here. I mean, I don't want to overstate it because the booking was really weird.